And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
All right, Johnny Donovan. Yes, indeed. Here we go on a Friday John Gambling show with, indeed, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
Good morning, John. It's a little bit chilly, but I can tell you this, that two people on the train this morning as I was coming uptown here said it's getting warmer, so, you know.
And giving you credit
for it. And giving me credit for it.
All right.
But we still probably had some snow and winter weather. It's, keep in mind, only the 9th of March or something.
It's the first part of March. You're absolutely right. Cold weather. This is the coldest almost of the entire season, and that's certainly a contributing factor to this tragedy up in the Bronx.
Yeah, I don't know whether they would have had the space heater going. It turns out the fire marshal who does a complete investigation whenever there's a tragedy like this, says that the hot water heater and the heating for the building was working after they knocked down the fire. They checked and it was still working. But nevertheless, there was a space heater. It appears that that's what caught fire. The person, I think it was a woman in that apartment, tried to put it out rather than call 911. Took a little while, but then called 911. Had the firefighters got there earlier, maybe we wouldn't have had as much of a tragedy or any. Also, she left her apartment and left the door open. The first thing, you always close doors so that the fire can't spread because it'll take a while to eat through the door. And without that, and it apparently just blew straight up the stairs, according to the fire marshal, trapping everybody. And then there were smoke detectors that didn't have any batteries, although whether that would have made any difference in this case, it's not clear.
That's why I was reading balloon construction, which means the walls are open. And again, if fire gets in those walls, it goes to the roof.
I was with the city's commissioner of the Department of Buildings. There are no outstanding violations on this building. That doesn't mean that they were in compliance with the building regulations. But we'll check and see on that. But there were no outstanding violations. But it's a great tragedy. You have 8 kids and one adult dead, and there's
a bunch in the hospital, I understand.
Yeah,
it's very
in critical and stable condition, so it may not be the total number of fatalities. Fire department did everything they could, and you know the way they train, and I think one of the lessons here is it's a wake up call for the fire smoke detectors. Even though it probably had nothing to do with this one, everybody should put batteries in. And, in fact, there's a program to give out free batteries, fire departments on top of that, and call 311. We'll make sure you get batteries. I always like the idea, whenever you change your clocks, which we do this weekend for daylight saving time, change the batteries. It's a good reminder. You're doing one. You might as well do the other. And it can save your life.
Are there laws, rules about numbers of people that can live in a dwelling?
I think the rules are really built around number of families, and I asked about that. We're still checking, but the first answer I got was that there were two families in two apartments in this building.
It's a one-family home, though, correct? Or
I'm not 100% sure. I believe they had converted it legally into two apartments, and in fact, we're thinking about converting it into three. Some families are big, I don't know that that was a contributing factor here. I think it's, you know, one of these unfortunate things where so many things go wrong. And if all of them go wrong, then you have a tragedy if any one of them didn't. If the space heater hadn't been on, if the space heater hadn't caught fire, if the fire department was called earlier, if the door was closed, those things may have eliminated
it. It's heart-wrenching on numerous levels, but the story of the wife that called the husband as this was unfolding, as he's driving the cab, I mean, we're all so afraid of fire. We can just envision the panic.
Well, that's why, you know, our fire department is bigger today than it was when I came into office, when it was on 9/11 even. We lost a lot of experience on 9/11, not just 343 of our of our bravest, but the experience, because a lot of them were senior people. And so while the city's budget requires us to sort of try to do more with less every place, it's the one department that I authorized more people than we had before. Now, it's 5 years since then. A lot of the experience has been gained back just with time and with training. And you know, it's a reason why we have a fire department and why we train and, you know, have great people and great leadership.
I know that you are you're only going to be with us till about 10:30 or so this morning, because you're going to be heading up there. Criticism about people saying your trip to Florida.
You know, I had a when I was woken up about the fire, I made sure that we had all of the appropriate city agencies involved. I checked with them before I left. I did gave a speech that I had scheduled in the morning, gave a press conference, and then I have had a responsibility. I was down in Florida with the mayor of Florida, who's a great mayor, on renewable energy buildings, ecologically sound buildings. You know, we have to build for a future in mass transit. They've done some innovative things. And then I had two meetings to raise some money for the World Trade Center. One got $500,000. It was a nice evening. The other one, I think we'll get some money out of. I met with four families, so I'm generous and I think might have an interest. But this was in one company and the founder who gave some money. And then, you know, got back late last night, and, you know, it's another day. I mean, these are tragedies, but the city has to, you have to grieve, but at the same time, you have to focus on how could we have prevented this? What can we do? Make sure we have a future. The school's chancellor was dispatched to the school where the kids went to, you know, try to calm those kids.
I mean,
the young kids,
yeah.
Sure, but you want those kids to go and have a, you know, a great life. The tragedy is these eight kids, maybe more if some of these injured don't make it, they won't have the life that you and I lead. But, you know, the city, there's a lot of things to do at the same time, and I know some people say, oh, you should stop everything, but, you know, you have to do them all. And when you schedule them, you just, if at all possible, there are times you cancel, but I made sure everybody was there doing what was right, and that's, you know, on to the next.
All right. Speaking of on to the next, let me take a break right here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and we will continue right here. John Gambling with an abbreviated Mayor Michael Bloomberg program today. He'll be leaving on the half hour, so let's get right into it. The governor of New York's budget has been derided from all sorts of directions, including the controller of New York, the various heads of the Senate and the Assembly, even the Bloomberg administration.
Well, I think that number
said,
one,
hey, we need more.
Look, everybody wants more, and nobody wants to pay the price. Right. So that's a number two. It is the governor's budget. It is his responsibility to come up and to set priorities. And, of course, he's going to get criticized by those who are on the losing side. And nobody on the winning side bothers to give him the time of day and give him credit. So you got to have a lot of sympathy for him. He's a new governor. He's trying to shake things up, and he was brought in to do so. I think we all hope that he is a great governor. I think Spitzer will be a great governor, incidentally. And that doesn't mean we're always going to agree. He has this mistaken idea that he should represent the whole state. And rather, I know, it's ridiculous.
It's silly of you to think
that. But, you know, that's, that would make some sense. And also, in all fairness to the whole process, it is New York City that is doing very well and generating revenue, and the rest of the state, or not the whole rest of the state, but there are parts of the state that really need help. And where else are you going to get the money except from us? The question is, how much? We already send $11 or $12 billion more to Albany than we get back. I say that's enough. He says, well, I need more. Okay. You know, and but the press wants to make fights. Those are just the negotiations. That doesn't, you know, number one, it's not personal. Number two, it's a natural, healthy kind of struggle that goes on. You want those kinds of struggles. He's got to address some things that are have not been addressed, not just in this state, but in every state. We all want medical care, and we don't want to pay for it. Medical care costs keep going up. per capita, and we want to have more people
covered. And
that's
really the cornerstone of his cost reduction program.
Yeah, but he's got other things, too. Look, he has – I will say this, because I'm sort of with him and not against him, but in other parts I'm not sure whether what's right. When it comes to helping our Health and Hospitals Corporation hospitals, which treat people that really need help and are these great hospitals in this city supported by the public that depend on Medicaid, he's done a very good job in this budget to help the Health and Hospitals Corporation, 11 hospitals, and I'm pleased about that. The issue of what do you do with the non-governmental hospitals, private and voluntary hospitals, he says, look, costs are there, and we're supporting a lot of things, and we can't afford it.
New York's Medicaid costs, I understand, are twice what any other state in the union.
Yes, that's true, but we also use Medicaid monies to do other things, for example, to support graduate medical education. And, you know, the federal government pays half of Medicaid, so that's not necessarily a bad thing to do. But it is true that we spend in this country $5,000 per capita and life expectancies less than in Europe, where they spend $2,500 or $3,000 per capita and life expectancies 4 or 5 years more. And I gave a speech about that in Washington maybe 5, 6 weeks ago. The outcomes aren't as good, and particularly in the context of how much money we spent. Now, you know, every hospital, I used to run a hospital, I used to be chairman of the board of Johns Hopkins, as you know. These are very tough businesses. There's enormous demand, and nobody wants to pay. The private sector is grappling with how do you pay for health care costs. The public sector is grappling with it. And Governor Spitzer is got to stand up. And you saw other people have had, companies are always having fights because of this conundrum that we want it, we don't want to pay for it. Go back to Hillary Clinton and Ira Magaziner back in, that was 14 years ago, tried to address this issue. Everybody agrees it's out of control. Nobody wants to be the one that makes the sacrifice, whether it's in services or how much you get paid to provide those services. So, I think Spitzer really deserves a lot of credit for taking this on. Do I agree with him on everything? I'm just not enough of an expert on this particular issue to have a view. And what's more, I think this is his issue, and I'm going to support
Charlie Rangel's involved now.
Everybody's weighing in. My responsibility is to deal with the governor on how things affect the city. Also, how his budget affects companies and hospitals in the city. But, you know, when I have things to say to Elliot, we'll say them. I'll say them privately. Our budget director testified before the city council in terms of what the governor's budget, if it's passed this way. And remember, we have a legislature, too. So, you know, Elliot's real problem is he's got to come up with a budget to recommend, and then he's got to deal with a legislature. That's what democracy's all about. That's what he gets paid for. And I think he'll do a good job in doing that. And they'll come to an agreement. There'll be a lot of yelling and screaming. But in the end, they'll come to something that's fair and the kind of stuff that democracy gives you of some here, some there, and not perfect, but better than anything else. His budget is good news for us in terms of education aid, not so good news for us in terms of how much money he wants to take from us to use upstate. I'm sympathetic.
Also business taxes. There's new business taxes.
Yeah. I mean, some of that. I get mixed. I've talked to a number of these businesses. Some feel one way, some feel another. But that's what democracy is all about. And, you know, look, given Spitz has been in office for, what, two months and 9 days, he's got some successes already. He's fighting the good fight. He's not going to win everything. He's going to come out of some of these things bloodied. But, Spitz has got some pizzazz and enthusiasm and a belief. And I think he'll turn out to be a good governor.
All right. Speaking of dollars and cents, you got an agreement with the firefighters. It's not been agreed to by the rank and file, but
rank and file has to look at it, and hopefully they'll approve it. It gives them a raise, a significant raise, and it addresses the problem that came out of the PBA arbiter's ruling, where new firefighters get paid $25,000 now. They'll get roughly a $10,000 raise. They'll go up to $35,000, paid for with a few fewer vacation days and a little bit change in the overtime or nighttime differential. which is sort of inside baseball. But it is a good contract for the firefighters, and it's consistent with the city's contracts with the teachers and, you know, and all these things really get tied together. We've had for 100-plus years a pattern that where everybody goes the same way. You can adjust things based on the needs of a given department, but the total package has to all be the same for all, for example, the uniform services, which are slightly different than the non-uniform services. This is a contract that we negotiated face-to-face. A lot of yelling.
You still don't
and screaming.
Have a police contract.
The PBA has first chosen not to negotiate, said they wanted to go to arbitration. I've always thought arbitration is not good for anybody, and I think that's why we have this terrible contract right now where rookie cops are only getting paid $25,000. That's because the PBA turned it over to somebody else and then wouldn't cooperate, and the arbitrator said, this is what we're going to do unless you change, and they said, no, go ahead. And then they complain about it. But that's neither there. You're better off face-to-face across the table. That's what we've done with the firefighters, and I hope we can do it with the union and, in fact, with the PBA. And, in fact, after they said they wanted to go to arbitration, we said, okay. And then they refused to participate in the process, and we're in court right now because they wanted to do it. And then we said, okay, and you go through the process, and then they don't want that. So I don't know.
All right, multi-part question here on the schools. There's a new computer we were reading about that would track every single student, their grades, and the whole
yep.
thing. Teachers union comes out against it. Don't understand.
How can you not?
I don't understand that.
I mean, to not know and let the parents know how their children is doing would be the height of irresponsibility if we didn't do this. You got to have the teachers have got to know what their students are doing so they can adjust in the classroom. The principal has to know how well the things are going in classroom so they can adjust and work with these teachers and help them become better teachers. Parents have to know how well. I mean, how you can argue against information, I don't know.
Well,
but
the teachers must be afraid, and I'm making an assumption here. I don't know this. They must be afraid that information will be used to track their success.
It certainly should be.
Of course, it should.
Do you get rated? Do people
every
track
single
your,
day.
They look at your ratings.
Every
and if,
single
what
day.
What would happen to you if your ratings went down, John?
You and I would not be here.
You
might be here, but I wouldn't.
My ratings go down. Mine wouldn't. I wouldn't be there either. So of course, come on.
And the city
and this is our students. To say that parents shouldn't. We shouldn't have information about our students. I think irresponsible is the only word, but, you know, it's tied up and it's just nonsense.
And the city council is saying that more autonomy for principals is something that this seems wrong to them. Again, can you help me understand?
Because a cynic would say that they are looking at the political process where unions may or may not support them. But I would never suggest, and I want to be on record, never suggest that they would look at the politics to decide what is right or wrong for our children. Letting the principals run the schools, it's so common sense that I don't know what else you talk about. That's what a principal's job is, to run the schools, and you hold the principals responsible if their schools don't get better. And in fact, this fall, remember, we're going to start giving out report cards for every school, and the principals are going to be held responsible. And what's more, John, principals want to be held responsible.
Everybody wants to be.
And teachers want to be held responsible. That's why we're getting inundated with people who want to come and join our school system. It's really amazing that, you know, and we become a role model for the country, and then there are a handful of people for reasons that make no sense in the context of what's right for our kids, maybe only what's right for some union leader or something. I don't know.
Stories about the homeless. Numbers up. Disappointed?
Numbers are up. Disappointed. Trying to address it. You know, big problem. And if the economy slows down, it's going to be even more of a challenge. One of the other things I'm out raising money for, and I made a pitch for that as well yesterday, although I'll probably be less successful with the group I met there than with the World Trade Center Memorial, is to raise some money privately because we can't do everything with public funds. But we have a lot of people who are homeless, a lot of people who aren't sharing the great American dream, and I'm trying to do everything we can.
Is there any explanation from your experts as to why these numbers would increase? Is it directly related to the economy?
I don't think so. It's small numbers of people, number one. Mm-hmm. It's the housing boom in the city. As more people come into the city and take housing that they can pay for, the amount of housing that's available for the homeless where we're subsidizing it is less. And that may very well be one of the big determinants, but we're trying everything we can.
All right. Staten Island Ferry, interesting story this week, the costs involved there and how they've gotten.
It's very simple. Two new terminals, three new boats, 18 new rides, and another focus on safety after the terrible accident that happened back in, I think, 2003. It all costs money. Everybody wants all these things? Okay, this is what it costs.
Will it remain free?
I think that given the ridership, it's probably likely to remain free for the foreseeable future. They did have, when I came to New York, it was a nickel. And I vaguely remember if you stayed on the boat, you could come back for the same nickel. And we used to take, going on a date, this was in 66, a pizza and a six-pack. And it was one of those romantic cruises for a nickel.
I'm just thinking of the Michael Bloomberg.
That was great in 1966. And then eventually at some point they cut, I think they might have raised the fare to a quarter or something, but they eventually cut it out because it cost more to collect than the revenue. And we're trying to encourage people to take the ferry rather than to use the bridge.
Right.
So, you know, from a public policy point of view, you really should have all of your mass transit free and raise fines and parking things and everything else. Now, nobody's going to do that.
Right.
But
we argued that on the show here.
That's what you should do, really, because you want to make mass transit as attractive as possible, both from a cost and efficiency and pleasant and speed point of views.
Using your explanation, the cost should go down in coming years if the infrastructure has been upgraded.
Well, the problem, the politics of who's going to pay for what. For the Staten Island Ferry, we're certainly looking at the cost to see if we can do it for less, but nobody wants to compromise safety, and people on Staten Island need the service. You know what they would argue, and I think they have a point. Unlike other boroughs, there's only a few ways you can get off Staten Island. You take the Tappan Zee, you take the ferry, or there are three bridges over to New Jersey. But if you're trying to go to Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, or the Bronx, Connecticut, whatever, Westchester, you can't go any other ways. And so because it's an island, that they probably, you know, we should focus on making sure that it's as affordable as possible.
All right. I know you got to go, but Sunday night, 2 a.m., Sunday morning, really, daylight savings time. Are you concerned about a meltdown,
as some people
have suggested?
The world
is coming to an end?
Twice a year, we move our clocks, spring forward, fall back, and do what else?
Change your batteries.
Change your batteries and your smoke detectors.
I'm a quick
way to go,
Mr. Mayor. I know you have to go up to the Bronx. Thank you very much for coming in. We'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it. It'll be the day before the official St. Patrick's Day.
That's right. You'll be wearing the green. We continue here at 77 WABC on the half hour. George Weber.